This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Massage Envy, the first podcast devoted entirely to Arkansas baseball. Featuring insight from Arkansas baseball color analyst Bubba Carpenter. Here's Matt Jones.
I've been covering the Razorback baseball team for a decade and a half, and I can't remember a postseason sight that was as entertaining as Obrate Stadium last weekend, not only from a game standpoint. You know, all of the games there were just crazy offensive high-scoring games for the most part. Set an NCAA record for runs scored at a single regional, NCAA record for most home runs hit at a single regional. You had the highest scoring game ever in NCAA tournament history. But Bubba, the thing that I think made that regional stand out even more than all the craziness on the field was the atmosphere. I mean, you had passionate Arkansas fans who made that short trip over to Stillwater. You had a big bunch of, you know, baseball fans there from Oklahoma State in that brand new, beautiful stadium. It just created a perfect setting, I thought, for everything that was happening on the field throughout the weekend.
You're right, Matt. I tell you, I don't know that I can remember anything like that. Now, that's my first regional to go on the road with the Hogs, but I'm telling you, it was crazy. It was electric, and it was so just the tension from the first pitch on was incredible. The excitement, and you know, we always talk about every pitch matters, every swing matters, and I'm telling you, from start to finish, it really felt like that was definitely this weekend's during that regional. I mean, it was incredible, but the atmosphere was great. You know, you could hear the fans going back and forth when the Oklahoma State would try to do a cheer, our fans would drown them out, and hats off to the Razorback fans for sticking through that game. You know, a couple of those games, those are some long games that, boy, they kept the energy up the whole time. It was just incredible atmosphere, and it's so much fun to be a part of, and glad we came out on top.
I've watched highlights from the Saturday night game quite a bit and listened to the call for that you and Phil Elson had on the radio. And the thing that stood out to me was just for it being a team that was on the road, the roar in the crowd was just really incredible.
Oh, it was. I mean, when Jalen Battles hit that grand slam in the eighth inning Saturday, it was unbelievable. It felt like we were in Baum Walker. It really did. It was so loud. And, you know, I think it kind of helped that the other side of the field got really quiet at that time. I mean, you could hear a pin drop on that side of the field, but it was great, a great moment. And I got to say that Jalen Battles' home run might be one of my favorite all-time moments that I've seen in Razorback baseball. I will say Charlie Welch's home run last year was big, but I think I put this one up there. This one might have topped that one just because of the atmosphere, the fact that everything that had happened in that game leading up to that point, just everything, you total it all together, and that's probably my favorite moment in Razorback baseball.
Yeah, I was thinking through this all the times that Arkansas's hit postseason home runs, and a lot of them have come through the regionals. And when I say they've hit home runs, you know, big kind of game defining home runs, it goes right up there with them. The Charlie Welch one obviously is one that comes to mind. Jared Gates home run that he hit at about 2:50 in the morning against Missouri State in 2017. The Toops home run, obviously that one kind of created a huge fan base against Wichita State in 2004. You had the Eibner home run at Omaha. This is right there though with them, I think. This was a really big defining moment in what I think we're going to remember for a long time as a really special series for this program's history.
Oh, I think so. I think the Toops home run was kind of the start of Razorback baseball. Not the start, but that really
– It built the fan base.
It did, yeah. The Brady Toops home run is the start of Baum Walker being what it is, I think. Mm-hmm. But you take this Jalen Battles home run – and you look at everything that led up to that, and we can mention Rock Riggio. His home run trot is the worst home run trot in the history of baseball. I've seen some really tired acts. I've seen some really bad home run trots. I got to say that was the worst. And so everything leading up to Jalen Battles was unbelievable. And I saw a clip of Jalen circling the bases. And he gave Rock Riggio a look when he was going around second. Didn't motion, didn't say a word. You didn't have to. The ball going 500 feet did the talking. The scoreboard did the talking. And that's what's awesome about it.
You know, I the feeling that I had throughout this regional with the same feeling I had last year in Fayetteville, and it's that these two teams should never have played in a regional. This is too good of a matchup for it to be played in the regional round. This is the type of matchup that you ought to see in the super regionals or in Omaha in a couple of weeks. Nebraska, they should have hosted last year. They're their Big Ten champions. The fact that they had to go on the road to play the number one overall seed in the tournament, that wasn't right to them. You know, same thing goes for Arkansas. You can talk about the RPI all you want to, but the eye test tells you, and it told you throughout the season, that this is one of the 16 best teams in the country, maybe one of the 10 best, maybe, you know, even higher than that. There's no reason Arkansas should have gone on the road in the regional round. And I felt really bad for Oklahoma State in that regard, because this Oklahoma State team, that's an Omaha caliber team. They've got the pitching, they've got the hitting. I know it didn't show the pitching wise so much in Stillwater, but I think some of that had to do with just the way the wind was blowing there. And you know, you kind of get into that environment of high scoring games. And it felt like it went from, it didn't matter if it was Grand Canyon and Missouri State or Arkansas and Oklahoma State or some variation of those matchups. You kind of get into that, and it's like, okay, this is going to be just a high scoring offensive day here. It's just the way this ballpark's playing. But back to my original point, that matchup should never have happened in the regional round. And like I said a couple of weeks ago, I would be really upset if I was a number one seed and I saw Arkansas in my bracket. And I think at the end of the weekend, I think that's the feeling over in Stillwater, is that Arkansas should never have been there in the first place.
Once again, I think you're right, Matt, but I tell you what, I don't feel one bit sorry for Oklahoma State. And look, they're a good team, but there's a lot of, I'll put them right up there with Ole Miss and some of their extracurricular stuff that they do. There's just a lot of stuff, just not really having a feel for the game, in my opinion. But you know, you see that in today's game, and you know, the game's changed a little bit, but you look at all the stuff that happened. You're right. They're a good team. They've got their offense. I just wonder, how good is their offense outside of Stillwater, outside of that stadium? Or would that team have done well in Omaha, where the ball does not carry? Now, they're a good lineup up and down, you know, but there's just so many things. I mean, something that fired me up in that game. So Evan Taylor gives up a home run to McLean. And look, the guy hit a bomb, and he stood there and watched it, dropped his bat, ran around the bases. And I said on the air, I said, hey, look, when you hit a ball that far, you could stand there and watch it. You earn the right to watch it. He didn't pimp it. He dropped his bat and ran around the bases. Mm-hmm. The next pitch, I don't know if you remember, was a slider over Marcus Brown's head. And you remember their whole dugout went crazy. Josh Holliday comes running out of the dugout. The third base coach is running his mouth. That's not having a feel for the game. That's an 80 mile an hour slider. All right. That's just not really having a clue, to be honest with you. I don't know the third baseman coach. I don't know anything about him. I love the fact that Michael Turner came out from behind the plate and walked towards him, because he was yelling at Evan Taylor on the mound. You know, and I don't know what Michael said. I never did ask him. It doesn't matter what he said, but he stood up for his pitcher. And I really love that out of my catcher. That's what I want out of my catcher. But look, it was an 80 mile an hour slider. If we want to send a message to somebody, we'll do it with Evan Taylor, 94 mile an hour fastball. That's what we'll buzz the tower with that. That's guys not having a feel for the game. And stuff like that is frustrating. And I saw a lot of that stuff throughout the weekend. Now, I will say, the only two guys that weren't saying a word are the two ex-major league guys. Matt Holliday, Robin Ventura, they didn't say a word about it, because they knew, guys, that's a slider. He's not he had already hit a guy earlier in that inning with a first pitch slider. It was slipping out of his hand, and he didn't have that good break on it. And he hit a guy in the butt with the first pitch. I think he hit Mendham with a first pitch breaking ball. But I mean, it's just, I don't know. I think all of that just kind of made that win so much better, because you look at all the things that added up throughout that game, and boy, I was just so glad that we came around with a win right there. And I think we were mentally tougher than them, and ultimately we win the series. And I think it came down to mental toughness and just playing the game the right way.
We could probably spend 4 or 5 hours dissecting what happened during the Arkansas Oklahoma State games on Saturday and Sunday. I want to talk more about what happened on Monday night, but real quick, a thought on Saturday and Sunday. Arkansas wins 20-12 in Saturday's game that puts them in the winner's bracket. And that was really, to me, that was the game that changed the whole series, because Oklahoma State had to throw so many more pitches and pitchers than Arkansas did throughout the course of the weekend, because they fell into the loser's bracket. On Sunday, Arkansas loses 14-10 in 10 innings, an incredible display by Oklahoma State that entire day to kind of gut it out and force a game seven over in Stillwater. But the thing that stood out to me about those two games, Bubba, in both of them, Arkansas comes back from a big deficit. And we've seen this happen a lot this year. In the first game against the Cowboys, they're down 5 runs. They end up winning it by 8 runs, kind of unbelievably. Scored 15 runs over the final 3 innings. And then on Sunday, they're down 4 runs early in that game. They come back. They take the lead late in the game on a Michael Turner home run. And we're going to talk more about Turner and just the incredible weekend that he had. But the thing, you know, that's really been the defining characteristic, I think, about this team this year, is that, you know, if you throw a haymaker in the third inning, it's probably not going to knock them out. You got to throw a haymaker late in the game to beat this team, and they're just so resilient, and I think that's why they're in the Super Regional right now.
Oh, without a doubt. The way these guys battled back, I mean, Saturday was a tough one. I mean, everything was going wrong. We had no answer to Oklahoma State's offense. They were just kind of, it looked like they were almost scoring at will, and we just kept coming back and just scoring and staying in it. And then, you know, you give credit to a couple of the pitchers came in and did a really good job kind of slowing that down. Zach Morris came in and kind of quieted their bats a little bit on Saturday. They still scored a few runs, but still, you know, they scored 2 runs off of Zach, but he was able to go 3 innings and kind of slow things down a little bit and give us a chance to get back in it. But hats off to the offense. And, you know, we beat their best guy on Saturday. You know, they saved him for us. Justin Campbell, he's going to pitch in the big leagues. He's got 3+ pitches. He's a little bit of a head case. And you could see we got on him. Once we started taking some pitches, he got a little flustered. You could see his body language change. His whole demeanor out there on the mound change. And we were able to get him out of the game and get into the bullpen. And then just a series of really good at-bats back-to-back, not swinging at borderline pitches, getting pitches to hit. And when we got them, we put the barrel on them, or we were able to work counts and get walks and just really kind of keep the chain moving. And boy, it was fun to watch, Matt.
A lot of people are going to say Saturday and Sunday were more fun to watch because there are so many runs. Personally, I don't like that. I like having some pitching and defense sprinkled in to games. That's baseball to me. And I thought Monday's game was the most entertaining of all of them. And I guess it had to do with the fact that there was so much riding on that game. You know, the loser didn't get to keep their season going. The defensive plays that Arkansas made in that game, I think about, you know, even in the first inning, Zach Gregory catches a ball running and jumping out in left field. You got the great play by Caden Wallace, probably the best defensive play of the season for Arkansas, where he bare hands the roller and throws the guy out at first base. You know, Robert Moore, we've seen him make some of those whirling throws to first. But in that situation, in, you know, a game that big, huge play. Michael Turner back picks a runner at first base on a, you know, kind of a called play in the middle of a pitching change on the first pitch from Cole Ramage. You've got Chris Lanzilli making a sliding catch in right field that kept Rock Riggio from being able to advance from second to third and really took away another sacrifice fly opportunity. You have the Caden Wallace play in eighth inning where he throws to second base and gets Nolan McClain there. Just so many defensive plays, and I may be missing one or two, Bubba. So many defensive plays, though, in that game that allowed them to win it, obviously, but it also, I thought, took some of the pressure off of those pitchers, all of whom had thrown earlier in the weekend, to know that they've got that kind of defense backing them up. But the defense has been the story of this team throughout a lot of the year, and I don't think they've had a better defensive game than they had in their biggest game of the year.
I don't think so. I tell you, it was incredible. And, you know, I go back to what, you know, you and I talk about it every week, and it's how I coach that way. I talk about every pitch. I try to get my kids to bear down. Every pitch, every swing matters. DVH talks about it all the time. And it's a perfect example. You mentioned Zach Gregory's catch. But for me, the play of the game was Caden Wallace in the second inning. Bases loaded. Atkinson's up. He's already had multiple hits against us. Been on base the whole, you know, the whole time. We hadn't been able to get him out. Caden Wallace is playing deep. When he hit that ball, I just kind of put my head down. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's a base hit. And then we got Rock Riggio coming up with the bases loaded. I didn't think Caden had a chance of making that play. I don't think another third baseman in the country makes that play. And I think that I honestly think that was the ball game right there. And it's crazy to say because everything that happened after that, but that game could have turned huge right there at that moment. And then, you know, in the third inning, you know, you mentioned it already. The play that Robert Moore made deep in the hole in right field. I mean, that saves a run. That ends that inning. But I really go back to the Caden Wallace play. I really think that changed things. And all those other plays you mentioned too. Lanzilli was huge. Lanzilli didn't just make the diamond catch in right field. He got up and kept the runner from tagging and going to third, which was huge right there. I thought the bump play you mentioned with Caden Wallace, where he throws McLean out at second. McLean was kind of dogging it. And that's another, it's those little things, Matt. You won't see a Razorback base runner do what McLean did. He didn't anticipate the ball going to second, so he's not running. And I don't know. It's just little things like that, to me, pump me up. I agree. Monday was my favorite game, and I love offense. I love seeing balls hit hard, and there were some balls absolutely crushed. Monday was my favorite game from start to finish. I mean, I never sat down. I mean, I'm up, and it just seemed like every pitch was the pitch that could change the game, and it was awesome.
But to your point about the play that Wallace made, and I'm talking about the one in the second inning more so than the one in the eighth, who are the best third baseman in Major League Baseball right now? What, Nolan Arenado, Matt Chapman? That's as good of a play as either of those guys would have made.
Yeah, without a doubt. And then, you know, the night before, the diving play that he made to end the game, diving to his right, getting up and throwing a ball about 100 miles an hour across the infield. I mean, but no, that play on that slow roller, Nolan Arenado, there's very few guys, I think, that make that play. He didn't just make the play and get to it. He threw an absolute rocket to first base in the air. He landed on his stomach after he threw that ball, and it was a perfect throw right on the money. It's just incredible play. But you know, he's going to be a major league third baseman, and you know, I tell you what, he's worked his butt off, and he deserves it.
I've told people all year that if you look at Wallace's fielding percentage, don't get fooled by that, because you know, you call them hustle errors. There have been a lot of those for him. There were, you know, two or three errors where he played on some pretty bad fields. I think maybe three just in Round Rock alone early in the season. He's so much better than his fielding percentage would suggest. The pitching on Monday night, incredible. You think about the fact that Zach Morris had thrown 49 pitches 2 days earlier. Colt Ramage had been used in that regional. Zebulon Vermillion had been used. And, of course, Hagan Smith had started Saturday's game. The work that Morris gave them, great. Ramage was really good for, I guess, his first probably 1 2/3, maybe two innings of that outing. Vermillion gave him solid work, but the story was Smith and the way that he came in at the back end and shut Oklahoma State down. Some of it self-inflicted, but in a tough situation in the eighth inning, he hits a batter. He walks a batter, I think, with two outs, and then he strikes out Rock Riggio, who's the hottest hitter in that regional. Just an incredible moment there for him. And then to come back and be as dominant as he was in the ninth, it makes you wonder, with the struggles that he's had as a starting pitcher here in the last 4, 5, 6 weeks. And, you know, that's not the first time that he's come in out of the bullpen and looked good. He did it against Florida as well at the SEC tournament. Makes you wonder if they might start to think about using him on the back end more.
Yeah, they could. I mean, there was talk of it in the fall. But do you see him, the way he bowed his neck at the end of that game and got it done was really impressive. And I'm impressed that Dave Van Horn left him out there. I think the fact that DVH and Matt Hobbs left him out there, I think that gave him a boost of confidence. But, you know, he started out the inning, hits Nolan McLean, Marcus Brown lays down a bunt, and he walks the next guy. So you got bases loaded. That's the three pitches he threw Atkinson. I don't know if you remember, before those pitches, you know, Michael Turner said something to him. He kind of stepped off the mound and looked around, and it's almost like he was just taking it all in. And he threw three fastballs right by Atkinson. And then our favorite player of the weekend, Rock Riggio, comes up. And once again, it was awesome to see Hagen kind of walk around the mound. I've never seen him do that because he always works really fast. He just walked around the mound. It's almost like he was taken in and he was feeding off the energy of the crowd because it was crazy. It was loud. I got a headset on and I actually pulled the headset off just so I could hear how loud it was in there. Crazy atmosphere. But I think he embraced that. I really do. And I think he, you know, Phil said it on the air. Phil said that, hey, look, we just watched Hagen Smith grow up right here on the mound and mature. And that was the moment. And then he got back on the mound and just shoved it on Rock Riggio. And just that 2-2 fastball he threw by him was a great pitch. Two fastballs away. But boy, he comes back with that 2-2 fastball, you know, just probably belt high, just high enough to get it by Rock Riggio. And it was awesome. I love it. That was my second favorite moment. The Jalen Battles grand slam. And then that were probably my two favorite moments of the weekend.
Well, you know, and he hasn't pitched well away from home this year. That's been the struggle for him. You know, think about his worst outings of the year. Most of them have come on the road, and including the 1 1/3 inning that he threw in game two against, on game two of the regional, the first game they played against Oklahoma State. And so to pitch that well in that environment, in that moment, how big of a moment that was, on the road when he hasn't pitched real well on the road this year, I thought that even made the moment, you know, more significant for him.
Oh, without a doubt. But talk about a gutsy call, but DVH and Matt Hobbs going to him in that situation. And we had said it before the game. We said, hey, for us to win this game, Hagen Smith has to throw a few innings and he's got to give us a few good innings going in. Now, I was anticipating more middle of the game. I would have never thought that he'd be the one closing the game out at the end. But, once again, hats off to DVH. He always seems to push the right button. And he knows what's inside these guys. He knows what they're capable of. And it's just, I tell you what, he stepped up and did a job for us. Hagen did.
I asked Van Horn after the game. I said, did you see anything different from him mechanically? He said, not really. He said, what I saw was a guy with steam coming out of his ears. He said he was mad about what had happened Saturday night. Not mad necessarily that they had taken him out so early, mad that he hadn't pitched better for his team. And I thought it was a great story that Van Horn told after the game. He said that after they lost to Oklahoma State on Sunday to force the winner-take-all game in the regional, he said that he stood up on the bus and told the pitchers, if you've got anything, let me know, text me. He said, my phone starts going ding, ding, ding. Hagen Smith's the first one, says, I want the ball. That tells you a lot about him.
Absolutely. I told that story this morning, and I think that's awesome. He was the first one. But all the other guys, too. I mean, you think about what happened on Sunday. A lot of people had counted us out, Matt. They really had. But all those guys that texted, every guy in that bullpen, I think, wanted the ball. I think they all did. And that's a testament to the toughness we have down there with some of those guys, even some of the guys that haven't got to pitch a lot. You know, Tress came in and gave us a big out. Couple of big outs,
and he was up warming up in the bullpen when Smith was pitching,
right,
ready to use him again.
Yeah, I mean, but the fact that those guys wanted the ball, because it's real easy to, in that situation, you know, because we know how Oklahoma State's swinging, you know, they're swinging the bats hot. Everyone knew that. They knew that. It would have been really easy for a guy to say, my arm's a little sore today, coach, I can't really go. But they all wanted the ball. And that says a whole lot about this team and that bullpen and those guys down there. That's why I'm going into Chapel Hill this weekend. I feel really good about it because I know we got guys down there that want the ball. And that, boy, as a coach, that's what you want.
We're so focused on Oklahoma State. I forgot to mention, we're going to have Aaron Fitt on the podcast later today from D1Baseball.com. He'll help us preview the Super Regional this weekend in Chapel Hill, which begins Saturday morning at 10 o'clock Central Time. 11 o'clock on the East Coast, where they'll be playing. Bubba, what was different about the Razorbacks this weekend? You know, I mean, they had hadn't played poorly, I think, until the Alabama series and then in the SEC tournament. But they hadn't been playing their best baseball for, you know, probably about 4 or 5 weeks before that series against or the regional over in Oklahoma State. What did you see that was different about this team? Because I don't know if I can put my finger on what was different, but it was clear that they were playing a whole lot differently than what we've seen of late.
You know, I think they just rallied together. you know, and they came together as a team. There's one thing to be a bunch of talented individuals, but I think this weekend we played as a team. I think offensively, I think the pitching staff, I think defensively, I mean, we played as a team. And I don't know if it had anything to do with the Michael Turner stuff that went on. Maybe that was a rallying cry for this team. I don't know. But, you know, talking to a couple of guys, they just wanted it. They really did. They went in there and they wanted it. Now, I will say, when you're playing a team and some of the antics that went on in Saturday's game, if that doesn't make you mad as a player, when a opposing hitter hits a home run and stares down your dugout and prances around the bases like that, if that doesn't get you fired up and get the juices flowing, then you need to go play another sport. You need to try soccer, because that right there, I don't know if that had anything to do with it. I said later on that I think that was a big turning point, right? I think that really made these guys mad, because mm-hmm. they're not just disrespecting them. They're disrespecting University of Arkansas, Razorback baseball. That guy's disrespecting everything that we believe in and those guys believe in and they work for and they fight for. So I think that had a lot to do with it. I don't know. I know up in the booth, I don't think that I've ever been that mad in the booth in my life. And it's a good thing I didn't say what I was thinking, or I probably wouldn't have a mic in my head or a headset on anymore, because that's frustrating, because I don't like it. And I know they don't like it. I feel like, you know, you got a guy out there disrespecting the state of Arkansas, the University of Arkansas. And I think these guys felt that. And I really think that fired them up a little bit more as well.
Michael Turner, you mentioned it. He had a great weekend, MVP of the tournament. Most are going to focus on the offensive stats, and rightfully so. 8 for 18, 11 RBI, he scored 5 runs. Seemed like every time that they needed a big hit late in a game, he was there, or a big at bat. You know, he took a walk during that 8th inning rally in the first game against Oklahoma State, at the go-ahead home run in the 8th inning of the second game against Oklahoma State, the game the Razorbacks lost, and then at the big 2-run double that gave him some insurance runs in the top of the 9th on Monday night. But, you know, I mean, defensively, he threw out a couple of base runners, doesn't count the runner that he picked off at first, caught 4 games. And the thing, one other thing that I don't think a lot of people have said about Turner is that not only did he catch 4 games, but in a regional where there were 148 runs scored and 41 home runs hit, he caught the 2 best pitched games of that regional in game 1 against Grand Canyon, when Connor Nolan and Cole Ramage threw, and then on Monday night, when they held Oklahoma State to 3 runs. Don't discount the presence that he had behind the plate. I hate it that people compare him to Casey Obitz, but that's just the nature of it, because he replaced him. You know, talk about he doesn't show any emotion. Man, watch the final 2 innings against Oklahoma State on Monday night. I have not – you wouldn't find Casey Obitz more emotional than what Michael Turner was during those games. If you're a lip reader, go watch what he said after Hagen Smith had the 2nd strikeout of the 9th inning, and then he showed a lot of emotion at the end of that too. Just what a really cool weekend for him. And then for it to come on the heels of all that crap that he had to deal with the week before, that was storybook stuff for Michael Turner.
Oh, without a doubt, that says a whole lot about him as not just a baseball player, but as a person. He's able to put all that other crap behind him and go out there and play the game the right way, play hard, came up huge for us. I love that back pick where he picked off, who was it that he picked off? Was it Trinkle he picked off at first base?
Yes.
That back pick was huge right there. That's a momentum shifter late in a game. And he called that. He saw it. I mean, you can see it happening. You know, he was getting a big lead. You're right. There's so many little things. I like the fact that he goes up to the plate against Campbell, and he had already struck several of us out on that changeup. He kept throwing a changeup. He worked the count. He got to a 3-1 count. And I'll tell you, as a hitter, it's really hard to sit on a changeup 3-1. Our whole lives we're taught, hunt the fastball, hunt the fastball. He sat on a 3-1 changeup. hit it down the line for a double. And that's a veteran at bat right there. And those last two runs, they were huge in Monday's game, getting those last two runs on the board, making it a 4-run game. And so, yeah, hats off to Michael Turner. And he really did. He showed a lot of emotion throughout the year. You've seen him slap the glove on the ground and after a big pitch and do stuff like that. There's more emotion there. He's not real, you know, in his post-game interviews, he's not real loud and vocal. But he's a leader, and boy, he really did step up this weekend, and he was huge. And I really think the pitching staff loves throwing to him, and that's huge.
A couple of other offensive stars, Caden Wallace had a great weekend, hit 4 home runs, had some other big hits. A 2-run single helped one of those comeback efforts. Peyton Stovall, probably the best we've seen him play over 4, you know, real meaningful games this year. And I hate to use the word meaningful. They all mean something, but you know what I mean? We haven't seen him in SEC type games or in the big non-conference weekend type games play the way that he did over those 4 games in Stillwater. He ends up in the regional bubble with 8 hits. He and Turner tied for the team lead with 8 hits over the weekend. And it looks like maybe something's changed with Peyton Stovall, and maybe he's kind of matured into the type of hitter that we thought we were going to see earlier in the season.
Well, I've said all along that he's going to be a great hitter. You know, I think when he hurt his finger, took a little time off, Dave set him out a few extra games. There's something about sitting out and just slowing the game down, Matt. And I think that really helped Peyton be able to just slow things down a little bit. But on Monday, he had 2 really big 2-out RBI hits. That was the difference right there early in the game. He's just good at bats. He looks calm up there. He's not chasing pitches now. He's sticking with his approach, and he's starting to come on it. You know, hopefully he'll carry that over into Chapel Hill this weekend.
We've talked a lot about the positives from the weekend. You know, the one negative has got to be that they only got 8 outs from their games 2 and 3 starters, Smith and Jackson Wiggins. Arkansas is not going to announce a rotation, I think, for probably another couple of days until they get out to Chapel Hill. And when they do, Bubba, it wouldn't surprise me if we see Will McIntyre in one of those 2 starting or one of those 2 spots in the weekend rotation. I think he's earned it. He had a great relief outing, actually a couple of really good relief outings in Stillwater. We saw them kind of tinker with this and put him in the rotation when they went down to Alabama and played the Crimson Tide at the end of the regular season. You got to do something, I feel like, to shake up the rotation, because you just can't keep getting very little production out of 1 or 2 of your weekend starters. And so I'm going to be really interested to see what they do this weekend to try to counter what they've been seeing from their rotation.
I'll tell you, man, I'm not worried about the pitching, to be honest with you. We got Connor Nolan can go game 1. We know that. I think he's going to do well against this team. It's a good hitting team. But I think that 2-seam cutter slider combination is going to do really well. Game 2, you know, maybe Will McIntyre. They may give him the start and then do exactly what they did here. If they need to go to a guy, you know, whether it be Hagen Smith or whoever, but I don't think they're going to. You look at some of these guys we've got in the bullpen. Zach Morris could even get a start for that matter. Zach came up huge for us, but Evan Taylor, Brady Tiger, Cole Ramage, Zebulon Vermillion, you got all those guys you could go to. So we really don't need a guy to give us a whole bunch of innings. We can almost treat it like an opener and just say, hey, go out there and give us 3 innings and we're good to go. You know, I think we're really built well for a 3-game super regional. I really do, with the pitching that we have. I think we've got a lot of really tough matchups that we can throw at a team. You know, Evan Taylor wasn't his best over the weekend. Neither was Brady Tiger. I see them coming back and dominating against this offense next weekend or this coming weekend at Chapel Hill. I really do. But then Cole Ramage was good. I mean, I don't know. I just feel really good about it. And I don't even care who starts. I don't, but I agree. I mean, it's an issue, but I guess what's hard to figure out, Jackson Wiggins started out that game. Now the scoreboard's a little hot, but 99 on his first pitch, 100 on his second pitch, 99 on his third pitch, absolutely blew Rock Riggio away. He's got electric stuff. It's just a matter of getting that fire in him to where he can maintain that in a start. Now, maybe he ends up coming out of the bullpen and just throwing gas for a couple innings. Who knows? But he's got to be able to locate that to be effective. But I really don't – I don't know, Matt. I'm not worried about who's starting game two. I think you're probably right in the sense that it could be a Will McIntyre just because you know he's consistent and you know what you're going to get out of him.
Yeah, he's been really consistent for him at the here toward the end of the year. Did you think it was odd to see Connor Nolan come in and try to close a game a couple of days after he had started?
Okay, so a lot of people kind of poo-pooed that call and said, well, why would you do that? You got Brady Tigers, your closer. I like it. I honestly do. I love the fact he's our veteran guy. He's our leader in that pitching staff. Yeah, when I saw him warm up, I was pumped up. And I'm like, yeah, I want the ball in his hand right here. Now, he couldn't get his slider over the plate. He got a quick out to right field, a fly ball to right field, and then walked a couple. He had back-to-back walks. You know, and then he gives up the line drive to left to Zach Gregory. And I haven't asked Zach. That was at the right trajectory. I think it got in a light, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. Now, Zach may never use that as an excuse, but I played a lot of left and right. I know for some reason, well, I didn't play a lot of left, but when I would play left field, lefties that would hit that ball that slices at that trajectory always got in that light tower above the first base dugout. Always. It seemed like it always happened. Now maybe that has nothing to do with, but whatever, he slipped, he didn't catch the ball. If he catches that ball, there's two outs, runners at first and second. I think Connor finishes the game. But the long-winded answer is I love that call. I really do. I love the fact that Connor Nolan had the ball right there. I actually told Connor Monday during batting practice, gave him knuckles and said, hey, you're the one I want with the ball right there. It didn't work out, but I'm glad you wanted the ball and I wanted the ball in your hand. I was happy to see it out there. It didn't work out, but if we have that same situation, I wouldn't bat an eye if Dave did it again. I'd love to see it.
Back to the resilience, it felt like Oklahoma State had won the game whenever they got that hit off of Nolan and got the runs there in the top of the ninth inning. Arkansas comes back and gets a big two-out, two-run hit from Brady Slavens in the bottom of the ninth. Just an incredible, incredible regional, one that I don't think I'll forget for a long time. The Whole Hog Baseball Podcast is sponsored by Massage Envy, voted the best day spa and best massage in all of Northwest Arkansas. Visit Mike and his staff in Tuscany Square at 2603 West Pleasant Grove Road in Rogers, or in Fayetteville at 3557 North Shiloh Drive. Massage Envy has services for everyone. MassageEnvy.com.
Massage Envy, with clinics in Rogers and Fayetteville, has been awarded Northwest Arkansas's Best Day Spa and Best Massage. One of the reasons is our care for athletes, both serious and recreational. We now offer rapid tension relief sessions using a high-caliber vibrating tool and total body stretch sessions like the ones used by the PGA. Both of these new services can be combined with the always popular deep muscle treatment. So whether you compete or just want to relax, there is no place better than Massage Envy.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
You know it never goes out of style? A great burger. And for a long time now, the best burgers around have been made at CJ's Butcher Boy. I've been stopping at their Russellville location for years to enjoy a double with bacon, cheese, and all the fixings. Well, the fries are always made fresh, and their shakes are made with real premium ice cream. And now that CJ's Butcher Boy has a Fayetteville location too on Weddington, you can bet I'll be there a lot more. CJ's Butcher Boy in Russellville and Fayetteville. When all you do are burgers, they have to be the best.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Now let's look at this week in the SEC, presented by CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers.
Five SEC teams are in the Super Regional. Five of the nine won their regionals over the weekend. Tennessee defeated Georgia Tech. Ole Miss defeated Arizona in the Miami Regional. Texas A&M won its regional over TCU. And Auburn won its home regional where it played Florida State and UCLA. Of course, the Razorbacks with 15 with that win in Stillwater. Teams that got eliminated over the weekend, Vanderbilt, Florida, and LSU, Bubba, all lost one-run games in championship, in decisive championship games. LSU lost by one run at Southern Miss. Florida lost by one run at home to Oklahoma. A lot of people didn't feel like the Gators deserved to host. There were some people that felt like Florida took OU's hosting spot. And so OU gets to go on to the Super Regionals. Vanderbilt fell into the loser's bracket in game one in Corvallis, fought out of it, got Oregon State to a decisive game, but lost that one by one run. And then Georgia was the other SEC team, and they lost in the Chapel Hill Regional, where North Carolina is going to host the Razorbacks this week. Your thoughts on the SEC and what you saw from them over the weekend?
You think about it, we could have easily had eight teams in Super Regionals. You know, a couple of those one-run losses, I mean, those were tight games. But here, what's impressive to me is you look, there's four SEC West teams in Super Regionals. Now, the East, you know, we knew Tennessee ran away with the East. I didn't think the East was that strong. But the West, you and I talked all year about how strong the West was. And Dave Van Horn did as well. You know, and everyone's been saying, oh, the SEC's down. It's a rough year. No, it's not. The SEC West was tough this year. I mean, from top to bottom. And you and I talked last week about Ole Miss. I don't like Ole Miss. I can't stand Ole Miss. But
shocking.
I would not have wanted to been a team facing them in a regional. They're a veteran team. They've got a powerful lineup top to bottom. You know, so it doesn't surprise me that they came out of their winners. But I just think it's awesome that four SEC teams, SEC West teams advance. Because we have been beating up on each other all season, and it really showed the strength of the SEC West. And you and I talked about it last week, you know, what we thought about the SEC West and how strong it is. And, you know, people are down on the Razorbacks for not winning the SEC West. Well, that's a gauntlet you got to go through every year. And it was a really strong division this year, and it shows with four teams in Super Regionals.
Yeah, not to mention they lost by one game to A&M, and that's a pretty darn good A&M team. I think we beat that drum for about 2 months now. Hey, depending on how you want to look at it, there's seven SEC teams in the Super Regionals. You got OU at Texas.
Well, yeah, if you want to look ahead. I like your optimism.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Women's College World Series going on this week. You've got OU at Texas. Somebody in the press box in Stillwater said, how long is it going to take before the SEC claims that one?
They probably already have.
Matchups this weekend in the Super Regionals, you've got, of course, Arkansas at North Carolina. Texas A&M is going to host Louisville. Tennessee hosts Notre Dame, and I want to talk about that one here in just a minute. Really, though, Bubba, I mean, you want to talk about bringing the inner redneck out. How about Ole Miss at Southern Miss in Hattiesburg? Can you imagine what the atmosphere is going to be like down there for this one?
I think you just said it. There's going to be some crazy tailgating going on down there, Matt. You know, that's going to be a great one to watch. I don't know how game times, I haven't looked at their game times to see how they match up, but I think that's going to be a fun series to watch. I really do. And as much as I pull for the SEC, I can't pull for Ole Miss. So sorry.
They played a game down there, I think on a Tuesday or Wednesday night late in the season, maybe the last week of the season. Who would have ever guessed at that point that that was going to be a super regional matchup? You know, just Ole Miss finally put it all together, and they were benefited by the fact that I think Miami went two and out in its home regional. There was the tropical storm that went through there and caused some problems too with all the rain that they had. It delayed the regional. So it wasn't your normal regional, but Ole Miss gets out of there and finally plays up to the level that I think a lot of people thought they could. Tennessee and Notre Dame, this one is really interesting to me because you know, the feeling that I got from reading the guys at D1 Baseball and Baseball America on Memorial Day when the selections were announced, that Notre Dame was really hosed, not getting to host a regional this year. Second straight year that they're going to go to an SEC heavyweight. They gave Mississippi State all they wanted last year. And I think that this is a really interesting regional to watch this weekend at Knoxville. I think Notre Dame could go to Tennessee and potentially win.
I'd love to see that. And you're right. I think Notre Dame did get hosed. And all the guys that are really in the know all agree that that was one of the worst calls that made by the committee, them not getting the host again this year. But, you know, we'll see what happens. And they got their hands full going to Tennessee. But I tell you what, and I don't know enough about Notre Dame's team. I haven't really gotten into the numbers to see what they've got, but I know they're a strong team, and there's people that are saying they can go in there and win that thing.
SEC Report brought to you by CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers, the best burgers in two towns. You can visit the original at 2803 North Arkansas Avenue in Russellville, or the newest location at 3484 West Weddington Drive in Fayetteville, just minutes from Baum Walker Stadium. Skip the line and order online or download the app in your app store. CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers, when all you do are burgers, they have to be the best. Bubba, you mentioned this a minute ago, or we touched on it a little bit, but what do you think the regionals tell us about the SEC and maybe just kind of the overall power of the conference? To me, I think the fact that you had so many teams get down to decisive games, I think there's probably a little bit of an intimidation that goes on when you play SEC teams. There's certainly motivation there, but there's something about the games that they play in these conferences and the way it prepares you, I think, for these big postseason games. Maybe intimidation is not the right word, but maybe preparation, the preparation that the SEC gives you for these postseason games is unlike you see in any other conference.
Yeah, I think it is, Matt. I think these guys, it's an incredible gauntlet that you go through every weekend in the SEC. And these guys get into these regionals, and it's not that there's bad baseball. It's just that there's a different brand of baseball in the SEC. You talk about, you know, the strength of the hitting lineups up and down, just big, strong, physical guys, the pitching staffs, power arms from top to bottom. I mean, it's a different brand of baseball. You know, I watch batting practice when other teams come in, or when, you know, we get to a regional or super regional. And look, to me, SEC players look different than non-SEC players. Doesn't mean they're not good. It's not football. You know, it's not all about the size, but they just look stronger, more physical. When they hit the ball jumps off their bat different. The pitchers, the ball comes out of their hand different. You know, I grew up playing in the Southwest Conference. I thought that was really good baseball back in the day. But today's players in the SEC, they are really, really good.
Yeah, three SEC teams make it to the College World Series last year. If I remember this right, I think 2016 was the last time that there weren't at least three SEC teams in Omaha. So you got five chances for teams to punch their tickets this weekend. Again, you've got Arkansas at North Carolina, A&M hosts Louisville, Tennessee plays Notre Dame. You have the Ole Miss, Southern Miss series, and Auburn goes to Oregon State. With that in mind, how many teams do you think get it to Omaha this weekend?
I tell you what, I was talking to Quinn Grovey and Zim, and I said five. I said I think all five SEC teams will win. And what do you think? Who do you see as an upset here? Now, Southern Miss could possibly beat Ole Miss.
See, Southern Miss, to me, that's not an upset over Ole Miss. Wouldn't it be an upset the other way around?
No, because Ole Miss is hot right now, and they're just scoring so many runs, and I don't know what Southern Miss's pitching staff is going to do with those hitters, to be honest with you. Now, they're good. They're really good, and you're right. I mean, it's, you know, I guess on paper, you look at it, Southern Miss should be favored to win, but, man, Ole Miss with all those veteran players, they've been in that situation before, and I think that helps, having the experience and the veteran players they have.
I think most people would consider Notre Dame over Tennessee to be the biggest upset. I don't know if I agree with that. You know, Tennessee went to Kentucky and lost a series this year. So if Kentucky can beat them, I think good teams can beat them. Now, nobody has gone into Knoxville and beaten them this year. I think that's the big difference in this series. I'll tell you the one that I think would probably be the toughest is Auburn going out to Oregon State. Oregon State's hard to beat on their home field. That's a long trip out there, you know, quite a bit longer even than Arkansas going to North Carolina this weekend. Auburn's good. I haven't trusted Auburn all season long. And so I think I would be most surprised if Auburn won its super regional at Oregon State.
I think you're right. I think that's going to be a tough one. Now, didn't they lose to San Diego first game?
Oregon State lost to Vanderbilt and the
Sunday, they
beat Vanderbilt on Monday night.
Kind of had my hands full in Stillwater, Matt. I was kind of locked in. Wasn't really watching. With all the stuff going on in Stillwater, I was trying to keep up with the other games. But yeah, I think you're right. Auburn, that's going to be a tough one to go out there at Oregon State. I don't know. I think Tennessee's going to win. I think A&M, they're good. A&M's really good. I think they're going to go through Louisville. I got my money on the Razorbacks, in case you're asking.
I kind of figured that was coming.
Massage Envy has been voted the best day spa and best massage in all of Northwest Arkansas. Great therapists and estheticians go along with a new service that I am truly excited about. Rapid Tension Relief uses a special tool that will melt the tension and soreness away. Trust me, you will not be disappointed in the results. I highly recommend this feature along with a total body stretch assisted stretch program. Whether you are competing at a high level or just want to relax, these services are for everyone. Massage, rapid tension relief, total body stretch, deep muscle treatment massage, you choose. Or you can try any combination of those. So the next time you're feeling tight, make sure to call my friends at Massage Envy.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Grease Pig, this is Mike.
Coming in hot! So I can just stay in my vehicle during my oil change?
That's right. The Grease Pig wants to help keep you safe, so now you can stay in your vehicle during your oil change.
These guys are working like a pit crew.
That's part of our 17-point inspection, where we check your belts and hoses, we check and fill all your fluids, and offer full repair on all vehicles. And of course, we use Castrol products.
Why do I smoke coffee?
You know our waiting room is still open.
And give up front row seats to my own oil change? No thank you. You're doing awesome! Mike, I think I'm making them uncomfortable.
Get into the Grease Pig, your local automotive specialist for over 20 years.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Let's take a look at the week ahead, presented by Grease Pig.
Arkansas and North Carolina this weekend in the Chapel Hill Super Regional. First game is Saturday at 10 a.m. Central. The Razorbacks and the Tar Heels will also play Sunday at noon Central. There will be a game Monday if needed. Arkansas goes into the Super Regional with a 41-19 record overall. North Carolina 42-20 overall. The Tar Heels were one of six regional hosts that had a lower winning percentage than the Razorbacks going into regional weekend. But as we mentioned earlier, North Carolina really hot at the end of the year, won 19 of their final 22 games going into this Arkansas series. They were the ACC tournament champions. Really hot stretch here for the Tar Heels. The week ahead is brought to you by the Grease Pig. For 20 years, they have been specializing in serving UA students, faculty, and staff with two locations in Fayetteville on College Avenue and MLK Boulevard. The Grease Pig has experience for all your repair needs and, of course, complete service oil changes staffed with ASE certified master technicians. They also provide tires and alignment services at their location on College Avenue. The Grease Pig, it's all about taking care of you, a proud supporter of the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. We go now to Aaron Fitt. He is a national reporter for D1Baseball.com, lives in North Carolina, and sees the Tar Heels play on quite a few occasions. Aaron, we appreciate you taking time to preview this week's Super Regional.
My pleasure. Good to be with you.
Hey, you too. So you live there in the Raleigh-Durham area. I'm sure you've seen a lot of Tar Heel games this year. But let's start off with just the North Carolina program, this team this year. What can Arkansas expect to see this weekend?
Yeah, well, I mean, as a program, of course, they're no stranger to the hosting regionals and supers and getting to Omaha. I think this is their 10th Super Regional in the last 20 years, which is among the most in the country. There's only a couple of programs that have been to more. And a lot of those have come at home. You know, usually when they get to Omaha, this is their path as they host. But this was not really a team that we thought would be in this position. You know, this kind of felt like a bridge season for North Carolina. I mean, heading into the year, it was kind of a wild card team. I mean, they were young last year. They kind of grinded their way into a regional. I think they were a 3 seed out in Lubbock last year, if I recall. And And we thought, okay, I mean, you know, a lot of these guys are back. It should be a good position player group, but there were just real question marks on the mound heading into the year. And so I remember seeing them in the fall and liking their talent, especially on the position player side, but thinking, well, we need to wait and see with the pitching. And so we debated it. We weren't in our preseason projections. They were one of the last teams, along with Texas A&M, ironically, two of the last teams that were kind of on the board for us in our preseason field of 64. And we wound up leaving both of them out, you know, which doesn't look so great now. For a while, they came out of the gate hot this year. And you know, it seemed like, all right, this is a top 15 team. And they just hit a lull in the middle of the season. They lost five straight weekends and they got swept at Virginia, and they kind of had to, you know, get together and figure out who they were, you know, at that point. And ever since then, I think they've won, I don't know what it is now, 16 out of 18, something like that. I mean, it's been a different team down the stretch. They've really figured it out. And the offense is looks very scary right now.
This is a program that kind of reminds me a little bit of Arkansas, just in the way that there's a lot of continuity in the coaching staff. You know, Mike Fox was there for so long, and I think he was an assistant coach for Mike Roberts. Now you've got Scott Forbes in there. I wonder, you know, in that regard, how much do you think that helps the program that they just kind of go from one coach to the other, but there's a lot of familiarity there.
Yeah, I definitely think it really matters. I mean, you know, Scott Forbes has been here since 2005, I believe, in this current run. He also had a little run here before that as a volunteer, but he's been in Chapel Hill since 05. And so, you know, it's a long time. And when Coach Fox retired, it was kind of a natural progression to go to Forbes. And if you look at that coaching staff, it's all, you know, it's all Tar Heels. It's Brian Gaines, who pitched at Carolina. It's Jesse Weers-Bickey, who was a catcher at Carolina. And Jason Howell is their volunteer. You know, he was he's a Carolina guy who's had a couple of different stints there in the coaching staff. So it's just I remember seeing Coach Fox after they won the regional in kind of the bowels of the stadium. And he's so emotional about it, you know, because it's like for him, all these guys, he's just so proud of the coaching staff and Forbes in particular, because, you know, this was Coach Forbes' second year at the helm. And I think for a while, some of the fan base was starting to wonder if this was the right guy, you know. It's, and that happens sometimes when you've got a new coach who's replacing somebody who's been there a long time and had a lot of success. And Mike Fox had been to Omaha seven times. And I think some of the fans were starting to wonder, like there's a little bit of rumbling going around midway through the year this year. And, you know, so I think for Mike Fox to see Forbes in particular have this success, I mean, you know, you could see it. They hugged afterwards in the ACC tournament. They hugged afterwards in the regionals in both times. Like, it was super emotional for both of them. So it's very, very genuine, that whole relationship. And I do think you're right. Like the parallel with Arkansas, that continuity, it definitely is a big part of the program.
You touched on the stretch there in March and April that they had, but the, you know, the thing that stood out to me as you were naming off those teams and I looked at their schedule is that 37 of their 62 games this year were against teams that have made the NCAA tournament. This is probably one of the toughest schedules that any team's played in the country.
Yeah, and I think if you look at their record against was the top 25 and the top 50 teams in the RPI, I mean, it's 9-14 against the top 25. So it's a lot of games, you know, 23 games against the top 25 and another 13 against that next year, 26-50. I think it might be the most in the country, the top 50 games. It's a lot. So yeah, it's a rugged schedule, and you know, it helped them RPI wise and seeding wise that early in the season, they played East Carolina and won two out of three. They hosted Coastal Carolina and swept them. Those wound up, of course, being both good teams. And so they did some things in the non-conference that prepared them, I think, once they got into the ACC and for that rugged kind of mid-season stretch.
Yeah, I was looking at quadrant one games. Only Tennessee has won more Q1 games than North Carolina did. Tennessee's got 25 and North Carolina's got 21. The thing that jumps out to me when you look at them statistically, looks like they've got a lot of real big hitters. You look at guys like, and I hope I'm saying his name right, Angel Zarate, Danny Soretti, Vance Honeycutt, Alberto Ozuna. These are guys that all have big numbers, whether it be, you know, toward the top of the country in batting average or hits, or toward the top of the country in home runs. Seems like they've got a pretty balanced lineup.
Yeah, exactly right. And, you know, you would think it would be Angel, but I think they pronounce it Angel Zarate because it's the South. he's kind of like their classic, like veteran, I don't know, he's a fourth or fifth year guy now, but he's been there a while, and he was a role player, just a bench player for a while. And the last couple of years, he's really taken off, and he kind of sets the tone for him. He just controls the strike zone, line drive guy. And him and Cerretti, you know, Cerretti's at shortstop. He's really the glue anchor guy, the defense, switch hitter, line drive bat, a lot of doubles, but he's got double digit homers now too, controls the strike zone. He had a down year last year, and he's bounced back, hit for average, leads them in hitting. So, and he's kind of certainly one of the emotional leaders of that team too, but also just a real steady presence. So they've got those kind of veteran guys that help them go at the top of the lineup. And then you get into the real star power. You got Mac Horvath, who's just a dynamic sophomore third baseman, really defends at the hot corner. He's got power and speed. I mean, it's 18 home runs, it's 19 stolen bases, which gives you an idea. And talk about power and speed. I mean, of course, Vance Honeycutt, the freshman sensation for them out there in center field. Certainly one of the best freshmen in the country, but I think he's already one of the best players in the country. It's just a lean, explosive 6'3" athlete, former high school quarterback. First guy as a freshman in college baseball to go 20-20 in decades. We can't find the last one. I'm sure it's probably happened at some point, you would think, but at least the last 30 years, we can't find an example. But 24 home runs, 29 steals is pretty good. And he's just an absurd defender in center field. I mean, you might have seen the highlight of him stealing a home run in their elimination game against Georgia in the ninth inning last week. It was a key play in the game. So he can truly change the game with his defense. So, I mean, those guys are super exciting. And then you get kind of down to the bottom half of the order, and it's just role players. You know, I shouldn't skip over Alberto Osuna. That's just a big, huge, hulking physical presence, 20 home run guy at DH. He'll strike out a lot, but it's when he makes contact, it can go a long way. So some threats there in the middle, and then you got your role players below that. Mikey Madey, kind of their classic UNC, just grinder baseball rat guy, but he's really playing with confidence right now. He was the regional MVP, in fact. And then you got Tomas Frick, is just a quality defensive catcher. And you got a Kobe Wilkerson down there in the nine hole, not an offensive threat at all. That's a guy that you got to get out. He's hitting less than 200, but he's in the lineup for his defense because it's really shored them up the middle when they put him at second base.
I look at their rotation, and it looks like right-hander Max Carlson and left-hander Brandon Schaefer are 1-2 for them. And then maybe that number three spot's been a little bit of a revolving door this year.
Correct. They usually go Carlson, Schaefer, TBD. And just, you know, it's a committee effort on Sundays usually. And that's why I was kind of concerned when they fell into the loser's bracket, because it's not like a team that has a bunch of starters that they can ride, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, ideally for them, it's you win those first two games and you patch it together on Sunday. So when they lost on Saturday, it's like, all right, they got to win three more games now. And they've already used their two big guns, you know, on the mound. Now they brought both those guys back, which a lot of teams are doing now. I guess that's the fashionable thing, is this just, so we're just going to give everybody short rest, screw it. But you know, that's what they had to do to win. But I mean, it's a good bullpen with depth. You know, you've got a real closer at the back in Davis Palermo, who's like a 97, 98 mile an hour guy with ride up in the zone. He'll overpower you. Connor Bovier doesn't have great numbers, but there's another guy with real power stuff, mid 90s fastball with life, and good secondary stuff too. When he figures it out, he's got a chance to be pretty special next year. And then it's kind of like your matchup guys, you know, Sean Rapp, like a low slot lefty with a really good slider, very tough against left-handed hitters. You got Gage Gillian from the right side, who feels like both those guys pitch every day. But, you know, Gage Gillian is like a kind of a funky high slot righty whose calling card is a changeup. It's just a really disappearing changeup off of a like 87, 88 mile an hour fastball. It plays up because of the deception of the changeup. So it's different looks to throw at you. And, you know, Carlson, just your kind of, I wouldn't call him a stock right-hander. He's a little better than the stock right-hander, but it's like, it's not super overpowering. I mean, it's 91, 93, you know, kind of average life, I would say. There's a little bit of funk in the delivery. He'll change his tempos a little bit, but, you know, kind of a solid slider, solid changeup. No, nothing that's really a knockout pitch, but he competes and he's, you know, done a better job throwing strikes, I think, down the stretch. And Schaefer's your low slot lefty, kind of low three quarters, 87 to 90 mile an hour guy that has a good changeup. But I mean, the thing that struck me was in the ACC tournament against Virginia Tech, he shut those guys down, and that's an absurdly good offense at Virginia Tech. I mean, one of the best in the country for sure. He shut them down on two or three hits for nine innings, shut them out, and it was almost exclusively fastball. It was like 99 fastballs out of 103 pitches. I mean, it's just when he's got that pitch going, he can cut it, he can sink it, and kind of do different things with it. Boy, it's it plays up some, you know, way above its velocity, that's for sure.
You're talking about recycling pitchers. We saw a lot of that in Stillwater over the weekend. Yeah. You saw, you know, Justin Campbell come back in, Victor Medeiros for Oklahoma State. Hagen Smith closed out the game on Monday night. I wonder, as you're watching that series from afar, what are your thoughts about what you saw from Arkansas and Oklahoma State?
Just a knockdown, drag out. I don't know if I got that right. Knockout, drag down.
It was something. I mean,
Donnybrook. It was a Donnybrook. Yeah. I mean, my goodness, what a. I'll tell you what, it was draining just to watch it, even on squeeze play. I wasn't even watching every pitch. I was watching that along with all the other games, but it's just like, my God, that whole regional just wore me out. These 5-hour games and the slugfest and the back and forth and the no lead is safe thing. It's just like it's intense. It was intense baseball, you know, I was actually surprised by how low scoring the last game was, relatively speaking, compared to all the previous games in that regional. You would have thought those teams would be completely out of pitching and the bats would just go nuts again, but they kind of dug deep and found something, it looked like, in that last game on both sides. But just, I mean, talk about a test, you know, battle tested. We always talk about that. Couldn't be more battle tested than surviving that weekend. That thing was like a psalm.
It was real humid in Stillwater. And I thought that all of the hours that Oklahoma State spent on the field Sunday took their legs away Monday night. They just, they weren't getting the same power, you know, the same drive into their swings that they'd been getting throughout the weekend. It felt to me like that regional, it reminded me a little bit of Arkansas, Nebraska last year at Baum, that those teams shouldn't have been playing in a regional. They're too good to be playing in a regional. And I understand why Arkansas didn't get a regional host, the RPI and the way they finished the season. But I've said this a number of times. I think if you're Oklahoma State, you had to be just so upset when you saw Arkansas as a number two seed in your bracket.
Yeah, I would think so. I
mean, it's not a normal two seed.
No, it's not. And, you know, I think I've said this before, but I see a lot of baseball in the fall. I travel around and actually I saw Oklahoma State for 2 days and then Arkansas for 2 days. It was back to back, I believe, in the fall. And I walked away thinking, you know, at the end of the fall, those are the two best teams I saw, you know, and I saw Vanderbilt and Florida and lots of other really good teams. But those two just really, really jumped out at me. And we had them both as preseason top 10 teams. Certainly Arkansas, I think, was number two for us in the preseason. And, you know, I mean, heck, they won 18 games in the league, right? Was it 18 and 12? I mean,
that's right.
You know, it's pretty darn good. I know they didn't finish quite as strong and the RPI was what it was, but I mean, they're clearly extremely talented. I think they've lived up to, you know, their billing is certainly one of the better teams in the country. And they're definitely capable of going in here now and winning a super regional in Chapel Hill. Like, that's obvious. And it's another offensive ballpark. I think there were the second most home runs in regionals behind Stillwater were in Chapel Hill. Arkansas coming out of a very offensive regional, you would think they're probably ready to go here in Chapel Hill.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah, I think the SEC West for a lot of the year was thought to be down because Ole Miss and Mississippi State weren't playing up to the level of expectations. But I think what we've seen in the regionals, obviously Ole Miss gets out of Miami, but you know, A&M and Auburn were really good teams this year that probably not as much were expected of those two teams. It's almost like they've replaced the Mississippi schools, and now you've got four SEC West teams among the final 16 standing. I think it shows you that division turned out to be pretty good, and that doesn't even mention LSU.
It really is remarkable, isn't it? Because you're right. I think that was the popular sentiment most of the season, was the SEC West is down, because it took a while for us even to buy into A&M and Auburn as legitimate Omaha contenders, you know, and I've continued to pick against those teams so far to my detriment in the postseason. But I mean, like, they're good. At some point, you just got to be like, all right, you know, I didn't think they had enough pitching in either one of those cases. And I guess they do, because they're here, right? They just keep on winning. And Ole Miss, you know, is wound up figuring it out. And it feels like, again, it's a preseason top 10 team that suddenly is looking like it again, you know? But you're right. Like, I think you're 100% right. Ole Miss and Mississippi State both being down for a good chunk of the year did kind of color our perception, everyone's perception of the division. And then you wake up at the end and it's like, oh yeah, they got four teams in supers and LSU was nearly a fifth, you know? It's just insane.
I think Ole Miss has really turned the corner since they got Jacob Gonzalez back. And you know, they had so much young pitching this year. I think those guys have grown up. Just a couple more for you here before we get you out. Would it surprise you if I told you that given all the success that Dave Van Horn's had, and of course, Mike Fox, you know, for all those years at UNC, this is the first time Arkansas and North Carolina have met 33 years.
Wow, that actually does surprise me. Yeah, I mean, especially since I feel like there was some overlap with the two of them both going to Omaha. Yeah, so it's that. Yeah, that's. I would not have guessed that.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little surprising. And Dave said earlier this week, he said he's never faced North Carolina as a head coach in any capacity. That was a little bit surprising too. I want to ask you real quick. You touched on Bosch-Emmer Stadium there in Chapel Hill. Tell us about that ballpark. If I remember correctly, I think there was maybe they demolished it and rebuilt it somewhere around 2009, and that's about the time that we started seeing. You know, this proliferation of new ballparks across the country. I think South Carolina and LSU opened their ballpark that year too. You know, how does this ballpark compare to maybe anything that we would see in the SEC? Yeah.
I think it's very pretty. You know, has a classic feel that it doesn't have the big wall that Auburn has, and it's not as quirky as Auburn, but with like some of the brickwork and just kind of the classic feel that it has, that's maybe a little bit what it reminds me of. It does play very offensive to right center, especially. You heard, if you watch Squeeze play it all this weekend, you heard Berkey and Runes talking about just hit it in the air to right center, up and away. It's all you got to do. And it's like it's going out, but you know, it plays pretty offensive to left field too. I mean, it's just right now, especially the weather is what it is and the ball's carrying there, but it's not a very intimidating venue, I would say, by SEC standards. I mean, I don't think their baseball crowd is they'll have plenty of people in there. Don't get me wrong. They'll sell it out. And when they're going good, it'll be loud and, you know, they can feed off that emotion, but it's not like you can take that crowd out of the game. I'm just saying it's in my opinion, it's not like an elite baseball fan base. And I don't think that they would even argue with me on that. I mean, you know, I think even the diehards recognize like, man, yeah, I wish our atmosphere was a little better, but in the postseason, they'll stuff it. And again, if they can get out to a good lead, then they'll get on you and stay on you. But it's just it's a really pretty park. They've done a good job, a lot of little touches, kind of celebrating their history, especially over the last 20 years. And it's been a really, you know, 7 trips to Omaha, and I think it is now, and you know, 10 supers and all that stuff. Like they've been really, really good program for the last 20 years. And you see a lot of touches of that with the signage in the park and all that stuff. And, you know, and it's just a pretty setting in there. You get some trees out there, and Chapel Hill is a very nice college town, and the ballpark is right there tucked in campus. So it's a good spot.
And you'll be there for a game or two, right?
Yeah, I sure hope so. I think so. I mean, I'm going to start in Greenville, and we'll see how the weekend goes. And unfortunately, those two supers are overlapping, which stinks because I would love to have doubled up. But, you know, especially if Greenville goes 2 games, and I could get to Chapel Hill certainly for Sunday. And if there's a 3rd game Monday, that would be ideal. But we'll see how it all goes.
You can read Aaron at d1baseball.com. Aaron, we appreciate your time.
Matt, my pleasure.
Bubba is back with me. Bubba, what do you think about this series with North Carolina? What do you think the keys are for Arkansas to go out there and win this series and punch its ticket to Omaha again?
Well, you're gonna get tired of hearing this, but if we play like we did this weekend and just go out and play Razorback baseball, I said going into Stillwater, Matt, that I thought the key to us winning were the bats. I thought we had to get the bats going and score runs and take pressure off the pitching staff. You know, I still think so. I think if we can keep the bats rolling, keep putting together pure at bats up and down the lineup, put pressure on the North Carolina pitching staff, I think we're going to be in good shape. The defense is going to be there. And we already talked about the pitching. I like our pitching rolling into a 3-game series. I really do. But I think if we can keep our bats hot and keep pressure on this pitching staff, they've got a really good game one starter, Max Carlson. I would assume that's who we're going to see. He's got good numbers. But I think if we have a good approach against him, we get him out of there early, get into their bullpen early in game one, I think we're going to be in great shape.
you look at the stats between these two teams, they're almost like mirror images in some of the statistical categories. I mean, ERA, I think North Carolina is 22nd nationally, and Arkansas is 21st. In home runs, North Carolina's got 100 home runs. Arkansas's got 98. They're comparable, I think, in their batting average and some other categories. I think one of the big keys, though, is that North Carolina is going to be playing at home, and they've been really good at home this year. They're 33-7 there. I think that this weekend is going to be a little bit like Oklahoma State, in that I feel like the pressure is not going to be on Arkansas because they're not the host team. You know, that was one of the things that I felt like in Stillwater, is that there was so much pressure on Oklahoma State because, you know, they were in their new ballpark. It's the first time they were hosting postseason. They're a national seed. Similar kind of deal this weekend in Chapel Hill. I feel like the pressure is more on North Carolina than it is on Arkansas, because they're the ones having to play in front of more of their home fans.
I think so. And look, once again, baseball is such a mental game. I think there's an intimidation factor with Arkansas Razorbacks rolling into town. No one wants to see us come into town, Matt. Our reputation, our track record, Dave Van Horn, the style of baseball that Razorback baseball teams play. It's just, you don't want to face us. And I really think there's a little bit of intimidation factor with us coming into town. I really do.
Arkansas is the only team that has been to a super regional 4 years in a row. There's 9 teams that have been to a super regional 3 times in the last 4 years, and North Carolina is one of those 9. 2 really great programs that, kind of ironically, Bubba, have not met since the World Series that you played in.
Yep, that's right, 1989. So you can officially say that North Carolina has never beat us, Matt, because we're 1-0 against them. We played them in the College World Series in 89. I don't remember the game specifically. Yeah, I guess
I could tell you the final was 7-3. Yeah.
Yeah, we beat them 7-3 and sent them home packing.
Again, Arkansas, North Carolina, Saturday, 10 a.m. will be the first pitch. You can listen to Bubba and Phil Elson on the RSN pregame show. That starts at 9:30. I hope Bubba has his coffee ready. The Razorbacks and Tar Heels will also play at noon on Sunday, possibly will play Monday. I'll be in Chapel Hill as well. You can come to WholeHogSports.com throughout the weekend to read all of our coverage from the Razorbacks and the Tar Heels. And we'll be back with another podcast next week. We'll either be recapping the Razorbacks season, or we'll be looking ahead to an 11th trip to the College World Series. For Bubba Carpenter, I'm Matt Jones. We appreciate you joining us. Have a great weekend, everyone.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcasts on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.